Well, good evening, everybody. Welcome along to the people in the hall tonight and also the people on the internet. Welcome along to the Buddhist Society's midweek meditation. And just before we kick off and before I introduce tonight's speaker again, I would like to just remind everybody that the care group telephone lines are open now. We have care group listeners up in the house ready to take your call. So if you would like to call in, you can call in and talk about anything that you like. And of course, that's available really for anyone, anywhere around the world. You will be able to see the telephone numbers at the bottom of the screen. So just a reminder again that the care line is now open, ready for use. And tonight, once again, we're very, very pleased to have along Chris Perrier. Chris Perrier is one of our dedicated members. He's been a member here at this society for many, many years. Long-time practitioner and been interested in meditation all of his life. As I think when I introduced him last time, I mentioned that he even had a little bit of a turn at being a yogi in the Hindu tradition back when he was very, very young. 2 years.
Yes.
3 years. 3 years. So he's very well qualified, and he's the way that he works usually is to use his profession as a psychologist. He's a very good psychologist, and he uses that profession to really intersect with the Dharma and the way that the Buddha taught the Dharma. So it's always very, very interesting and very nice to hear the way Chris does present the Buddha's Dharma, and that's really what these Wednesday nights are really all about, just being able to give some of the lay community a chance to expound on their own Dharma practice and the way it works for them, and hopefully to pass on some tips for you too. So without further ado, I'll hand over to Chris Perrier now, who will deliver tonight's talk. Thank you.
Okay, folks, thanks very much for coming on this wild and woolly night. So I'm probably going to do an Ajahn Brahm tonight and talk about the first thing that comes in my head. I haven't really prepared this talk. I've got a few ideas in mind. I thought I might talk about Buddhism and being nice, because we Buddhists are usually very nice. And I wanted to talk about the whole idea of being nice from a couple of different perspectives. We oftentimes, Buddhists have got a name of being very easygoing, agreeable people, and tending to shy away from controversy and conflict. And what I wanted to raise and talk about tonight was the issue of being true to oneself and using or developing a sense of Buddha's teaching of compassion in its deepest and most profound way. Because when we talk about compassion in the Buddhist context, we always think of others and other people. But of course the Buddha said that I can think of no one more worthy of kindness than oneself and compassion than oneself. But that's conveniently and often forgotten. And it gives way, I think, a lot of the time, especially in spiritual circles, to the idea of being nice to others, and oftentimes having a sense that there's a hope and aspiration that they will be nice back to us and everyone will get along just fine. Quite often that is the situation. But I want to draw the distinction between genuine compassion, which is giving with no strings attached in your niceness to others, and giving and sometimes completely implicitly giving with strings attached to others. In other words, we are kind to other people, we try to oblige other people, but somehow we can oftentimes keep a silent bill of particulars about what we've done for person X, Y, or Z. And then when things don't go the right way, oftentimes there's a sense of feeling let down, and people we might bring up or remember all the times that, you know, we have assisted other people, but they have, and surely they should be able to help us out now. And this is a fairly common dynamic. It's it's by no means common, isolated to spiritual traditions. It's part of the human phenomenon. And in psychology, we call it codependency or caretaking. And it's something that, because oftentimes we learn in our earliest experience in life from the people around us that we give or that we receive with strings attached. And I think the Buddhist, or the Buddhist teachings, is the practice of compassion with no strings attached, giving with an open hand. And I just don't think it's really possible to be generous to other people, really sincerely generous to other people, until other people, or until we have received blessings from other people initially. If there's no sense of receiving blessings from other people, being cared for by others, especially in our upbringing, it's very difficult to actually feel full enough within ourselves to practice generosity. And so oftentimes people, you know, we will grow up in life and we will not have maybe have had experiences where we were given, or we may not have had sufficient experiences of receiving from others, receiving attention, receiving care. I mean, a lot of the time, for example, our parents give us food, shelter, and clothing, and that's fine. And oftentimes, there's a, from culture to culture, there's a sense that, oh, that's it, that's enough, that's all that you need to do, tick the box, I'm a good parent. But it goes past that into, you know, socialization in teenage years and young adulthood and your experiences. The idea that we really need to begin to fill that hole, or to address that if we've never experienced that sense of being given to ourselves, it's very, very difficult. It's very, very difficult to have a sense of fullness, contentment, and generosity to be able to overflow and give to others. And so the Buddha has some wonderful practices for this, The, you know, most of the people here would be familiar with the Brahmaviharas, practice of loving kindness and compassion, sympathetic joy and equanimity. And these are what the Buddha called the divine states. And if we are in that category of people that have not received perhaps what we should have received, in other words, in psychology we call it people who've grown up with an experience of emotional deprivation, not getting what they should have got, it is possible to actually do something about it. And what we need to do is to begin to harvest the little ways that the universe gives to us now. Even if maybe we've had a difficult time in our past, where there's been lots of disappointments, upset, trauma, whatever, it's not a lost cause. And we can do something about this. We can do something about this because when we can train our minds to be in the present moment, we can oftentimes begin to develop an appreciation of the experience of being all right now, that this is enough. That right now, there is not something wrong. There is not something missing. That this is good enough. And those of you who have hung around this place a long time, you will have heard Ajahn Brahm talk like this for the last 25 years. He's oftentimes saying things like this, and very wisely said. So, we may have had difficult times in our past, but what I'm saying is that it is possible to harvest beneficial experiences now to make up and to redress that feeling of poverty consciousness, that feeling of defectiveness. See, oftentimes we don't talk to other people about this stuff. We just keep it silently within our own hearts. And we may go out and, you know, be very forthright and very extrovert, but we can oftentimes carry this experience within our own hearts. In some dark corner of our hearts, we all have some of these sorts of experiences, more or less. And so what I think is crucial is to begin to develop an awareness of the little blessings that we have in life. If we have a look at negative experiences and difficulties in life, oftentimes they're oftentimes quite intense. You know, people might have shame experiences or embarrassment or this or that, or conflict in various situations. And they're very strong and they affect us. But most of our life, we're going on, and these things are not happening. Bad things are not happening all the time. What we know is that good experiences, either neutral experiences, in terms of the Buddha's teaching on the second foundation of Vedana, okay, in the four ballparks, the four foundations worthy of our attention, okay, our physical body, Vedana, perceptions, and the mind, or the mind objects, and so it's five, it's kind of consciousness. The four foundations of mindfulness, the body, Vedana, perceptions, and the mind. And what we know is that in this second category of feelings, commonly known feelings, although the Pali word is Vedana, it's basically formally translated as the hedonic tone of sensory experience, which means it's either pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. What I want to say to you is that most of the time, our experience is either neutral or there's a lot of pleasant experiences. But the thing about the pleasant experiences is that they're slow, small. The unpleasant experiences might be 6, 7, 8 out of 10 on a scale of intensity. And we may have a few of those scattered throughout the day or the week or the year. But we have many, many more of those. Many, many more of these positive experiences that are happening under our noses, that are only ones, twos and threes in their intensity. And this stuff really counts. If we pay attention, if we turn our attention to these small doses of positivity, they slowly begin to build momentum in our life, and we can begin to take those experiences in and internalize them and begin to feel what it feels like to feel touched, to feel blessed, to receive from the universe. And in the last talk I gave here, I talked about one of the major predictors, in fact, the major number one predictor of longevity in life, okay? The second one was important intimate relationships. But the one on the top, you wouldn't believe this, is the strength of our weak connections as we move through our week. The person that makes our coffee, the person that we buy our fuel from, the person that we say hello to as we walk around the park with our dog. If we can begin to have these short, sharp little connections with these people over a period of time, and we can grow the number of them, that really makes a really big difference. Because each one of those, each time that person smiles, each person, time that person gives a wave, even if it's a stranger in the traffic, okay, there is a sense subliminally, hey, you're part of my tribe. I'm safe. It's okay. What I've got is good enough. All of those messages become subliminal, and our level of background level of stress, we call it allostatic stress, drops. We feel safer, we feel more connected, and we feel more enjoyment in life. So how can we do this? What can we do here? What can we do? And what we're talking about here is beginning to harvest these weak experiences on a daily basis, on a moment-by-moment basis, of feeling contentment, of feeling good enough. Even as, you know, as the Buddha said, even the breathing in and the breathing out, the sense of this is enough, this is enough. First of all, being clear about what those states feel like. Knowing that there are many of them predisposes us to begin to have faith to look for those weak positive experiences. The next step, so the first step is to have the experience, have the experience. And the next step is to enrich the experience. In other words, don't just dismiss it. Someone waves at you or someone smiles at you. Don't just blow it off. Let yourself feel that experience. Let yourself show up for that experience. See if you can pay attention to that person smiling or that person really being there as the person, as you're talking to the person making the coffee. Really be there and get into that feeling of connection with the person. Smile at that dog that walks, you know, down the path in Lake Munger. The third thing that you need to do is begin to let that experience touch us. In other words, let that feeling of joy sink into our bones. And herein, we may have some little unconscious in the water supply rules that, oh no, that's for other people. I need to work hard and strive and do this and da-da-da-da-da. No, in this moment, I can receive. I can allow these experiences of feeling good in. I can take this in. I can allow myself to feel my interconnectedness with other people. And as you do that, that does a whole lot of really, really good things. A whole lot of really good things. It lowers our physical stress levels, our psychological stress levels, and it builds hope. It builds hope in our lives. Hope in ourselves, in that we can have a life, and hope in humanity as well. And that builds a sense, a stronger sense of common humanity. And then when the tough times come, you've got all these little deposits in the emotional bank balance, okay, of this emotional buoyancy. And when the tough times come, you can go through the tough times understanding with right view of the Buddha that everything is transitory, and that you can hold yourself in a state of buoyancy, hope and faith and kindness towards yourself and wisdom that this difficult time will pass. And you can begin to hold yourself and sit in that space as you go through the difficult situation. Perhaps it's the death of a loved one or loss of a job or something like that. That there is a sort of psychological space and psychological stance between me and this experience over here. I'm not pushing it away. I'm not minimizing. I'm letting myself feel the pain, but I've got other stuff that can wrap myself around that pain and hold me as I go forward. Inherent in this process is the belief system that I am worthy to receive. Worthy to receive, okay? Now, this is a fairly significant issue. If we have had experiences where we have had messages that we are not worthy to receive, for example, you know, issues to do with domestic violence or workplace bullying or schoolyard bullying or something like that, there can be, it can be a little bit problematic, and you might need some tweaking around issues around opening up to feel worthy to receive. There's a certain sense of security in actually fading into the wallpaper in life and not actually being as being part of life. There can be, I'll just fade into the wallpaper in life. And I have a few people that I'm aware of professionally who've taken a stance that I'll just dodge the problem by fading into the wallpaper and actually just, you know, go along with life. But the problem is that at a certain point in life, you realize I'm completely without any sense of agency in life. And oftentimes the penny drops in their 30s and 40s and 50s, and those people have difficulties from that point on. So I'm talking about these things now because we're going to do a practice now where we begin to identify these practices in terms of the Buddha's teaching on the loving kindness. When he told us to radiate loving kindness upwards to the sky and out downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will. So what that means, and my personal experience of what that means, is a sense of spaciousness of this feeling in the body. It's not an idea, it's a somatic feeling which exudes from the body into the mind and out beyond to in all directions, as the Buddha taught. And it needs to go both ways. So I'm going to ask you to think a little bit about a couple of different sorts of experiences, positive experiences, before we get into this. The first one is bring to mind a benefactor. And a benefactor is someone in your life that has been a mentor for you, a coach for you, someone who has been on your side, who has supported you, who you know has got your back. And you know that they've always just wanted the best for you. When you think of that person, there's oftentimes, you know, most people report a sense of just, relaxing, a sense of safety, and a sense of being in the space of goodwill and loving kindness. Another way to access or get into this experience is to focus on what I call a caring moment. Now, so the first one is a person, the second one is an experience, okay? What are caring moments in your life? When people have included you, they you know, last time I talked about being cared, you know, feeling cared about. It means being, have I had experiences in my life where I've been seen by others, really seen? Have I been included in a group and you know, people have gathered me into the group and asked me to participate? Have I experienced situations where I have felt accepted by someone else, really accepted for who and what I am? Have I been in a situation where it's fairly clear this person or these people like me? And of course, have I experienced a situation where a person has deeply loved me? That's a little bit of an example, but you might have your own variations on that. John McCransky talks about, he's a Buddhist teacher, he's a Lama, and he talks about an experience when he was a five-year-old, and he had an auntie who was just an auntie full of joy, and he always remembers coming home from school and the auntie would throw her hands up in the air, Johnny, Johnny,
what's happened today? And little Johnny's eyes would light up. And that's a caring moment. That's a caring moment. He was 5 years old, but, you know, 60 years later, it's still a caring moment. So what caring moments have I got in my life? Have a little bit of a think about that now, because we're going to use this stuff in a minute. And the third access to this sense of loving kindness and compassion is a religious figure. We may have a great faith in a religious figure, in the Buddha, in this context here, but if you belong to other traditions, you may have a faith in a guru or a teacher or a spiritual mentor of some form. And taking refuge in the memory of that person's goodness. So there are ways that we can access. So what we want to do is just actually go into the practice now. So just make yourself ready for meditation, and we'll start by coming into and arriving in this space. And then we'll go into this practice, and I'll step you through it, how to instill these things. Steady your position, get yourself in a comfortable position. And it helps to make an adhidhana a suggestion. An adhidhana is a suggestion in Pali, a direction. The first suggestion is simply to relax. To begin to relax, to be here now. And when we do that, we can start with the crown of our head, cascading down around the back and the sides of our head, and paying particular attention to those parts of our body where the vagus nerve endings manifest, around the sides of our eyes. And coming down to our jaw. And moving forward to the muscles in our cheeks. Of course, as Ajahn Brahm and many other people have taught, when we put a slight Mona Lisa smile on our face, we begin to activate the ventral response of the vagus nerve, which evokes a sense of not only relaxation, but a feeling of wanting to connect with others and wanting to connect with ourselves, relaxing the pit of the throat, the shoulders, down into the heart center. And spreading your awareness out throughout the heart center. All the way through to the back. Down through the diaphragm to the stomach and pelvis. And paying special attention to the sense of groundedness for the lower part of our body, our hips, our legs. Our contact with the floor, be it with our legs or with our feet. And so we are arriving now. Arriving. Where? Arriving here. In our body,
grounded in the earth. The yogis talk about kaya sternum, the stance of the mountain. If the body was a mountain, steady, still, the earth element. Arriving now. When? Right now. Not 5 minutes into the past, not 5 minutes into the future. Arriving right now. Give yourself permission to let go of the past and the future. It is safe enough to dedicate your attention to just being here, receiving now. And as you do, begin to spread your awareness out to the now of your experience in the body now. What does your body feel like now? As we're sitting here, breathing, and notice that you don't have to effort to breathe. The breathing will take care of itself. And as you decide to trust the breath, as you decide to trust the ground that you're sitting on to support you, there can be a sense of relief at letting go and allowing these processes to unfold naturally into a deeper and deeper sense of stillness, a deeper and deeper sense of spaciousness. And so we're not actually looking at noticing the breath per se. We're watching the body breathing. The feeling of the whole experience of the body undergoing spontaneous ingoing and outgoing of breath, with nothing to do and no place to go. Becoming more and more steady. And see if you can begin to spread your attention out in all directions, from the core of the body, from the breathing, from the heart center, out towards the extremities of the body. So we're taking in the feeling of the body and that sense of stillness and peace and good enoughness, of this is all rightness. We're noticing it more and more, starting to be present, because it is always there if we allow ourselves to notice it. Spreading out towards the perimeters of the body, as we do the spontaneous, or the body does, the spontaneous breathing process, looking after us. And noticing any sense of relief that you don't have to do the work. That there can be a sense of trusting that everything will go on by itself. And there can be a sense of stillness and a sense of lightness that occurs. And what can oftentimes arise in these situations is a sense of delight. There may be many things, but it's worthwhile giving your attention over to any arising of a sense of delight with the in-breath and the out-breath. And bringing in a sense of softness into this mix of your experience of the breathing. A sense of gentleness. That radiates inward and outward. Taking it all the way out to the surface of the body. And see if you can just continue to take it out a little further. Beginning to dissolve and giving preference to the feeling of this delight, this gentleness, this softness, this kindness. Ajahn Brahm talks about the beautiful breath. Giving this priority over our intellectual idea that we have a body shape. And this can sometimes be experienced as a breathing, but sometimes it can be just experienced as more a static pressure. And we're taking it out further and further in all directions. And as we do, you may find that the sense of efforting begins to dissolve as we allow this feeling to expand upwards to the sky and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded. And bringing in this feeling of the beautiful breath that Ajahn Brahm has talked about for years, tweaking it. So we're getting very close to the Buddha's injunction to radiate metta. It's not different from what we're doing. And as we do, allow yourself to be more in the feeling than in the doer of the feeling. Trusting that there can be a process ongoing without a doer. Radiating further and further out, in all directions, filling the room, beyond the room, whatever feels comfortable for you. But the experience here is of giving over to the feeling. Softness, gentleness, and bring to mind either a caring moment or your benefactor or a spiritual teacher. And imagine them within this space. Communing with you, or that experience. Growing the experience. Pay special attention to what it feels like, the flavor of it. You may wish to send a sense of loving kindness towards them. But also please be receptive to them sending loving kindness, softness, gentleness, whatever you want to call it to you. So that it's a two-way street, that you are allowing yourself to receive, give and receive. Notice any reactions to your receiving goodness. Notice any reactions to your holding back from giving. Relax into it and continue the process. See if you can turn up the dial on the intensity of this feeling. Like you're putting an extra piece of wood on the fire to grow it, to make it stronger and deeper. Now let those images dissolve away, but keep the feeling inside you. A sense of strong loving kindness going, radiating in all directions, outward and inward. Inward to your own mind and heart, and outward in all directions. So now we're going to do the second part of the practice. Holding that sense of wishing well for oneself and others. We're going to experience learning how to set boundaries and be separate from others. So keeping that spaciousness there. Imagining that you're in a field somewhere, perhaps. And there's a neutral person over there, some meters away, on the other side of a line. You are over here, and the other person is over there. On the other side of the line. And you have a sense of spaciousness and distance from that person. You can wish well to the person. You can feel content within yourself, knowing that you are here and that person is there. Take a mental picture of what that feels like. To be in the company of that person, but that person is on the other side of the line. Notice what that feels like. Now change the situation. Imagine that instead of a line there, there's a picket fence. You're on this side of the picket fence, and that person is on the other side. This neutral person. And you can have a sense of boundary between you and that person, a feeling. Boundary where you stop and the other person starts. When your part stops at the fence and the other person's part starts at the fence, you are different from the other person. can wish the other person well. You can wish yourself well. But you are separate from the other person. Notice what that feels like. This time it's a picket fence, not a line. Notice what that feels like. The feeling of it. That's what we want to notice. Now, once more, the situation changes, and this time you are on this side of a very thick wall, like the Great Wall of China or the Berlin Wall when it existed. And the other person is on the other side of the wall. What does that feel like? What does that boundary feel like? To feel separate from the other. They're existing and you're existing. There's a very strong boundary between you. Now once more, see the situation change. This time you are here on this side and the other person is on the other side of the world, far, far away. Get a feeling for what that feels like to have that neutral person not on the other side of the line, not on the other side of a picket fence, not on the other side of a thick wall, but on the other side of the world. And feel what that feels like, to feel what that boundary feels like. You've gone from a thin line to a picket fence to a thick wall and now the other side of the world. Feel what that feels like. A very, very strong boundary, very big boundary. Now once again, with the same analogy, pick another person who may be antagonistic towards you. You can pick someone in the world that you know, or you can pick someone in your inner world, perhaps your inner critic. Imagine the inner critic there some distance from you on the other side of a line, but you are on this side. And the inner critic is starting to criticize and yell, maybe wants something from you, or is upset, or is demanding in some way. But you are like a tree on this side of the line, and his comments are like wind, and you're like a tree with the wind just rustling through the leaves, but not being influenced, simply letting the whole thing pass through you. Feel what that feels like, to have a boundary between you and that critical individual, that inner critic, if you're using your inner world, people. Feel what this feels like. There's a line between you. This person is not on your side. They have not invaded your space. They are complaining, whinging, but they're on the other side of the line. Feel what that feels like. It's all about getting the feeling for this stuff. What does this stuff feel like for you? All the time you can radiate loving kindness towards yourself and the inner critic or the other antagonistic person using those spaciousness that we were employing before in the practice. Because that's the Buddha's teachings. Even if that person is sawing her arm off with a saw, you should still be radiating loving kindness, but that doesn't mean you can't set boundaries. And so what does it feel like now if that line becomes a picket fence? How does it change the feeling? How does it change your feeling of safety? How does it change your feeling of inner strength? Continue to radiate loving kindness to yourself and the other person, but there is a fence between you, protecting you. Feel what that feels like. Now imagine that that fence turns into a very thick wall, like the Great Wall of China or the Berlin Wall. And on the other side of that wall is that complaining, threatening, whinging person or the inner critic. But you have a boundary between you and that negative person or that negative inner force. Notice what that feels like. To have a sense of a solid boundary, a thick wall between you and that entity. Notice the feeling of personal safety beginning to build as the walls get thicker. Take a picture, take a mental picture of what this feels like. Remember what this feels like. To have a strong boundary, a very thick wall. And finally imagine what it feels like for that person to be on the other side of the world, still complaining, yelling, complaining, threatening. But you are here and they are on the other side of the world. Feel the sense of having a very, very large boundary between you and that complaining negative force. All the time, sending loving kindness towards that person and towards yourself. Understanding that it's not about changing the other person. They may be addicted to their anger. They may be addicted to their miserableness. But you are good with yourself and you are good with the world, however it is, because you have boundaries which cannot be invaded. You know how to set these boundaries. And there's a sense of safety and a sense of loving kindness towards yourself that begins to grow as you develop these abilities and these skills. As you move through the world. Remember what this feels like. And remaining with that sense of stillness, equanimity. No matter what the winds of change bring us, the eight worldly winds of change that the Buddha talked about. We can take refuge in our own goodness, and we can take refuge in our own spaciousness of our own good heart, even in troubled times. When people are not happy with us, we can still be happy. We can go back to that place of refuge. Remember what this feels like. Remember what these boundaries feel like. Remember what this spaciousness feels like of loving kindness, radiating out in all directions, the way the Buddha said. And then giving yourself a mental pat on the back for doing this work. This stuff is powerful, and it speaks to the core of the Buddha's invocation for us to seek liberation and freedom. And what we've been talking about today is a practical application of the teachings of the Buddha in the suttas, not something else. This stuff comes, the ideas and the principles come straight from the Buddha's teachings in the suttas. It's not some new age thing. It's straight from the Buddha's teachings. Okay, folks, that's it. You probably haven't had a meditation or a teaching like that in this hall before, but I think it's about time. So any questions, queries, complaints? Okay, let's pay respects to the Buddha Dhamma. Thank you.